What up, though? Big Boss Filmworks presents Motown Mafia Podcast with your host, Courtney Brown Jr., and yours truly, Big Lou Stevens. We chop it up about everything from the street corner to Wall Street and beyond. The struggle is real and the struggle is relative. Let's get into it.
What's happening, family? It is your man, CRB Jr., here at Motown Mafia Podcast, of course, a Big Boss Filmworks production. Hope all is well out there in the world. I am here, as always, with my partner in crime, my mellow man, what they call one of those D-Day one, the other half of Big Boss Filmworks. Big Lou, how you feeling, baby?
Man, life is good, man. Back to burn. We got some new stuff coming up. We got, before I really get started.
Okay.
I just had an interaction. Brother, forgive me for forgetting your name. I was up at a restaurant, and he recognized the t-shirt. And he said, where can I get that t-shirt at? And I had a Motown Mafia Podcast t-shirt, and he was obviously a fan. So I said, check right there under us in the box right below. You can pick up any of the t-shirts. And I'll be putting new designs up ASAP.
That's awesome. That is awesome. We should do that. By the time we do our next podcast, we're going to have a nice little promotion because we should do something for the people here.
Got to.
We should do something for the people here. Let everybody get a little Big Boss, Motown Mafia swag. Yeah. It's all good because we got a whole online store for the apparel arm of our situation. You've designed a few t-shirts in your day, have you not, Mr. Stevens?
That's how we met.
That is how we met.
That's the day we met. You looked at the catalog of t-shirts that I had put together. And you was like, oh, you're pretty clever. And from there, that's where this whole thing started, was merch.
Was merch, that's right. That's right. We'll have to tell the whole story again every time I think about Eddie Folks and that techno festival and the 600 shirts you got done for us.
Oh, yeah.
Do we have a technical?
No, nothing.
It's all good there.
Yeah, everything's cool.
So again, family, hope everybody's good out here. We're good here at Big Boss Filmworks. Got a chance to see some of the stuff we put up last week concerning a tribute to a dear friend of both of ours, my brother from another mother, Craig Joseph Johnson, a.k.a. 250, and Lou's grandmom, Annie Stevens. So we are back to work, putting both of those great people home. They're home going, and we excited to be back. We got a lot of stuff coming up your way. We got Making of the Mafia, right, Lou?
Making of the Mafia. I'll be dropping some clips soon.
Yeah.
New trailer,
all of that before the holidays.
Before the holidays.
We're looking to get that out.
And absolutely.
Get company with all of that. So kind of to get into, I guess, what we'll start off the conversation with today, which is going to do a little throwback. Freddie Myers, New York Freddie. I don't know how many of you guys have or have not heard of him, but we're going to unpack a little bit of his story, and hopefully you guys are interested. You can go check him out as we attempt to give the roses, even though it may be late for some of these street legends. Again, as the world of hip-hop and of urban culture becomes so mainstream, you know, I think we've been consistent with our thought that the people who really made this culture and were the pioneers of this hustle game street culture, that people recognize that and that they don't get all lost. Because these guys did their thing before Facebook. They did their thing before Instagram. Yeah. They did their thing before TikTok, before YouTube. But it was their actions that set the whole culture that led to this multi-billion-dollar thing that's all going on, you know, all around us. So, as you recall, and as we documented Making the Mafia, when we started this thing, we obviously consumed all kind of content of pretty much, you know, obviously you looked at the Mr. Untouchable by Dame Dash, the Nicky Bond story, the Felix Mitchell story, everybody. We went and we were going to go down this road of getting the Eddie Jackson and Courtney Brown story out there. And one of the more interesting characters when I was doing that had escaped me, and you got to know with having visited the old man for over a decade on and off in federal penitentiary, and Eddie's old man in the Fed joint, and all the other family and friends, pretty much all the names of all the players we'd either heard of, I mean, between Eddie and Pops, and the rest of the crew, dog, I mean, half of them they had interacted
with. Right, I was going to say, they ran into a lot.
One of the guys that had escaped our conversation or access to was a guy by the name of Freddie Myers. Again, New York Freddie Myers. He was chronicled on in Fed Magazine back in the day. And shout out again to the people at Fed Magazine. It was Fed that ran the first cover story on the Eddie Jackson organization. Right after we did that ad in Don Diva. The Fed's cover story, which has launched it. So, you know, shout out to those guys too. But yeah, this guy Freddie Myers was a big deal in Harlem. And there was, of course, so many correlations. Obviously, a lot of Freddie's run happened during the same era.
During the same with your dad's and Eddie's era.
Exactly. And what really stuck out to me, though, was that Freddie's run really went, I mean, you know, most... All respect to all the hustlers out there, but you know, most of the hustle stories are flash in the pans. You know, it's a 6 month run here, a year run here.
That one big flash of glory or whatnot.
That's the thing that made the Eddie Jackson organization so very unique. Well, two other things. That during the grand hustle, the golden run from 69 to 77, right? That's 8 years of street dominance in the city in Detroit, when Detroit was one of the major cities in the country at the time. I mean, so to stay at the top of the food chain for 8 years in Detroit, that doesn't get done anymore.
Yeah.
And won't. And then, of course, the whole legacy that would follow the fruit from the Eddie Jackson tree, Demetrius in the 80s, Demetrius in the 90s. You know, my father in the 80s, my father in the 90s, Butch in the 80s, Butch in the 90s, to Otis, to all the other people who came along the way that came off of the Eddie Jackson tree. You know, four generations, 40 years worth of street legend continued to roll. But yeah, this guy, New York Freddie Myers, he started doing his thing in the late 60s. And he was indicted, or the feds came and got him on March the 6th, 1983. So if we go from 69 to 80 is 11 years plus 2, 13 years.
That's a run,
yeah. The name of the Freddie Jackson, I'm sorry, not Freddie, he was far from a Freddie Jackson.
Right, he wasn't a Freddie Jackson.
Freddie Myers should never be confused with Freddie Jackson. New York Freddy's crew's name was Good and Plenty.
Okay.
Is what the streets called them, right? Because they had good product and they gave out plenty of it.
Plenty of it.
Yeah, it was called Good and Plenty. And, you know, there's a documentary that's called the Freddie Myers Story.
Yeah.
So, again, if you can check it out on YouTube. I suggest if you're into this kind of stuff. You check out the Freddie Myers documentary. It's amazing, a guy who really had the runny head and the level head, but kind of like Pops and later, they were as low profile as a hustler can be when you're doing $8 million, $10 million a month.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you can't.
But I think being that they were in New York, and I guess during the early parts of his run, you had Frank Matthews and Nicky Bonds, and then later Guy Fisher. I just think there were so, I mean, he was a whale, but there were just so many super whales in New York, and New York just being New York, and just a much easier town to blend in, having a ton of money. He was able to, his name didn't overring.
Right.
But he was definitely right there with all the other big guys in New York, Nicky Bonds and Guy Fisher and Frank Matthews, and maybe not, nobody probably is on the level of Frank Matthews.
But he
had an interesting story, again, very similar to my father and Eddie and Butch. Las Vegas, right? You know, again, you can see this stuff in real detail if you look at the Freddie Myers documentary. But just like Eddie and Pops ran into Frank Matthews at the crap table,
right?
And got to talking shit, gambling with each other, and and formed a relationship. Freddie Myers tells the same kind of thing, that he's actually on a plane going to New York.
Okay.
Fate would have it, he's literally sitting next to
the big fella.
The big fella himself, the Don Dada, the hustler, the boss's boss, right?
Right.
Right. He's sitting next to Frank Matthews. Frank peeps his watch, and they engage in conversation, and you know, they formed a relationship. And he talks about later that after they got back to New York, they you know, he rode, Frank had, of course, a limousine waiting for him as soon as they landed in Vegas. He tells Freddie Myers, "You can ride with me." They, you know, and I guess, I mean, again, just big fella, really big fella stuff. You guys like to hear real big fella stuff, because these guys, again, and I don't want to sound old, even though I am old now, but just, again, they didn't have Instagram and YouTube to chronicle, or and TikTok and Facebook to chronicle the lavish lifestyle. So now, and what I think I want the younger audience to understand, and the older cats my age will get, the lifestyle that you see today's hip-hop artists living
mm-hmm.
is the lifestyle that they saw and heard about from guys like this. And I say that with all respect, and I am so happy about this hip-hop thing and the fact that these young black men are making serious money and getting to a real bag.
Mm-hmm.
I just pray and hope that we get some financial literacy, because it was the lack of financial literacy of the Freddie Myers, the Eddie Jacksons.
Yeah.
Not that they were stupid. They all bought real estate and had legitimate businesses. But really being a little more savvy and understanding when you're handling
to transfer that
to
wealth.
Transfer that money and make sure the generational wealth,
mm-hmm.
you know, you know, really occurred. You know, in our case, mom made some incredibly strategic decisions,
mm-hmm.
which has allowed and served the family well, you know, over the last 50 years.
But absolutely.
Shout out to mom.
Shout out, Miss Brown.
You know, if every family that hit the big times and the hustles that had a woman like mom.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if many of these publications happen.
I mean, no, or maybe. Go ahead, unpack that for me.
Well, I'm saying, just like, you know, like the Bernstein family. Well, you know, yeah, you do have the Purple Gang. The Purple Gang comes and they have their run mm-hmm. during their time, but the wealth gets transferred, and most of those kids are what now? Journalists.
Shout out Scott Bernstein.
Shout out Scotty. Yeah. Lawyers. Doctors.
Well, it's an old adage I had heard, that the difference between Jewish gangsters and Italian gangsters is Italian gangsters' kids grow up to be gangsters, Jewish gangsters' kids grow up to be doctors and lawyers.
There you go. Yeah.
And again, that's a financial literacy thing, and mm-hmm. even though, Lord knows, the mob ended up transferring a lot of that money and cleaning it up.
Yeah, into legitimate businesses.
And so that's what I was thinking. My mentor always said, you know, Corey Jr., dwell in possibilities. So, you know, when you do, like, they do sometimes what they call revisionist history in fiction.
Mm-hmm.
What if this? What if the South had won the Civil War?
Right.
You know, what if America had lost World War II? What would the world be like?
Right.
You got, so that was in 69, I believe, when 69 or 70, when Freddie Myers runs into Frank Matthews. Pop it, Eddie would run into Frank Matthews in 72.
Okay.
You got all these whales of black hustlers coming and going in Vegas.
Right on.
That if they would have ever gotten in the same room, well, they did all get in the same room, but really pooled their resources and pooled their networks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they made hundreds of millions back, that translated in today's money is billions then, without working together or not working together directly. But what would those organizations and hustles look like if they would have been coordinating their efforts, coordinating their resources?
They'd buy cities.
They would have bought cities.
It'd be like...
It would have changed, literally changed the landscape of America.
It would have.
Because on some lower levels, it did transform Harlem. The hustle money transformed Harlem. Hustle money transformed Detroit.
Detroit.
But on very small scales.
Right.
as in because
you put that money together. That happens like how cocaine changed Miami.
Exactly. Or what Prohibition did with the Italians once Lucky Luciano organized them under the commission and broke up the families and broke them into families with, and then they were able to take all that liquor, that illegal liquor money, and do shit like build a city called Las Vegas. Right? And build a city called Las Vegas with that kind of money, right?
Yeah, man.
And then there was another great guy in that documentary, and shout out to the OG. His name was Jesse Gray.
Yeah.
Freddie Myers calls Jesse a hustler's hustler. You know, kind of guy that if you gave him 10 keys, he moved that. If you gave him 20 keys, he moved that.
Right on.
There was never, and it reminded me of some of the guys that, you know, the Eddie and Pops were dealing with. It just seemed like there was no end to how much product they could move. If the bag was right, they just turned the bag into money like instantly. Shout out to OG, this guy named JC Raxadad talks about that after they got popped by the feds on the initial indictment. Everybody, people a little squirmish dealing with them. JC basically was like, just give me the bag then. I'll sell all 30 keys. And did basically
and
ran through, or later Fat Frank, same kind of guy. So anyway, like in any business, you gotta run across those one or two guys who just really are plugged in and have a network to help move your inventory if you want. And that's what makes it difficult for the average hustler or businessman to ascend to great levels, because whether it's the street business or legitimate business, at some point you gotta have a distribution network, and obviously every distribution network needs a star. And Jesse Gray, well, he wasn't just, I mean, if you look at the doc, he was actually a peer of Freddie Myers, not really an employee, but those two did network together. And he said something that's really deep, and that is that their organization, the Good and Plenty Crew, wasn't based on money, how they interacted with people, that it was based on blood and relationships. And that again reminds me so much about them.
Right, the synergies between the two.
That, you know, Eddie's thing was, if he was family, or if you was, your relationship was right with them, then you could get money with them. So yeah, man.
That's deep.
Yeah. So I don't know if you got a chance at the end, and then of course I was the sad part of some of these stories. So he gets popped in 83. Basically 10 years later, the big homie that we know, Kevin Childs, would go down. You know, his situation, his right. case would start. And I bring that up because it was both, as in so many of those cases, an informant, somebody who the feds got close to them, that brought them down, and how unfortunately the players in the 90s hadn't learned the lessons from the players from the 80s, who had not fully learned the lesson from the players in the 70s. Because the Eddie Jackson organization, the Farrell Lee bust in New York, was, which led to the beginning of the indictment, that was a crippling shot, but that's of course not what did it. It was the informant, Roosevelt Neighbors, aka Johnny Quick. And again, for you guys out there, excuse me, brother, if you guys want to know the whole story of how that informant, Roosevelt Neighbors, Johnny Quick, infiltrated the Eddie Jackson organization and the Motown Mafia, check out Motown Mafia on Amazon. You can get the book, Memoirs of a Kingpin's Kid.
Yeah.
And of course, you've got the award-winning documentary where Pops and Rudolph, Butch really go into that. Again, how this informant got inside their organization through a guy named George Blair. Shout out to the Blair family, obviously, out there. These people used to shout out to us. And,
yeah, big shout.
You know, whatever people, however it went down with George, he was demonstrated an integral part.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, integral part of the organization. But unfortunately, he did bring a gentleman who would end up being a government informant into the circle of Eddie and my father. And in fact, Pops, of course, always tells the story that when they were at the house on Hubble, and this guy, Roosevelt Neighbors, Johnny Quick, was there with George, And he says he nudges Eddie, and he was like, "What's this guy?" And Eddie tells him, "That's George's man." And Pops reminds Eddie of his own edict. He's like, "Eddie, you said we don't sell to people. We don't know." And so I'm going to get to a part about following your instincts, family. So Eddie goes ahead and he serves George Blair with his guy, Roosevelt Neighbors, a.k.a. Johnny Quick.
Right.
After they do the transaction, Eddie goes to the fat man, goes to the big man. He says, "Eddie, I'm going to tell you this. If we ever have any problems..." You heard, go ahead.
Yes, yes.
What does he tell Eddie?
"If anything happens that brings us down, it's going to be him or that white woman that he's with."
And the only two witnesses that got on the stand against them was that white woman and Roosevelt Neighbors and Neighbors and Johnny Quick were the only people who actually took the stand and gave the most damaging testimony against them. Right?
Yeah.
So on that note, right? Pops Bob is telling him this guy's bad. Eddie know his own rule. Eddie that made the rule. We don't sell to strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Lacked money, comfort with friends because George is his man.
Mm-hmm.
George, high-ranking member of the organization. So now we gonna do what you ain't never supposed to do. We gonna make an exception.
Right.
To the rule. Well, there's a reason why the rule is the rule. Because the rule really should not have any exceptions to it. That's kind of what makes it the rule, right?
Right, exactly.
But they didn't. So I'm listening to the, and researching the Freddie Myers story. And his deal was, they go to Atlantic City. And this just, it's a bunch of different points to just make you think about us, our culture, how things were back then, and mm-hmm. on some level, how little things have changed.
Right.
Freddie getting money, hanging out at a famous spot where all the New York ballers called Small's Paradise.
In fact, okay.
If you look at American Gangster, a lot of those club scenes in the Denzel Washington movie, right? The Frank Lucas story, which ain't really the Frank Lucas story, but that's a different story. Small's Paradise was the one of the spots in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
So Freddie's at Small's Paradise. He's approached by a guy named Mousy. Mousy, it used to be his man.
Right.
You know how it go, but Mousy not getting high. Mousy all fucked up. Okay. Freddie and his crew, and just reminds me of the Eddie Jackson entourage taking, you know, 8 Cadillacs out to New York for the flight. Freddie and his crew about to get in all their Benzes and Cadillacs and go down to Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
Now they all diamond up and shit, and here come Mousy the dope fiend. But I think the audience understand this. You know, well, there is a code, and there really used to be a code. It doesn't exist so much in today's world.
Correct.
But back in the day, even if my man's fucked up, if he was my man, and he ain't never did nothing scurvy to me, and his only issue is he's got some personal issues, he's still my man.
Right.
And he still has entree to us who doing good.
Okay.
Even though he didn't fall off and he fucked up.
Right on, right on.
So we all who've been out there have had that relationship and that interaction. You've been, times was good, it was a different time and place. You and a guy was cool, y'all made a lot of money together. Maybe unfortunately, substance abuse gets the best of them, or life gets the best of them. But when you bump back into them, you don't kick them to the curb. You just be like, yeah, you know.
Right.
But it's a fine line because you know what come with somebody with substance abuse issues, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They just magnets for bad luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
They suck rock.
Right.
People, it's sad to say it ain't been funny style because I've had my own issues in life. But people could be getting high when it gets to, like, dope fiend levels, shit. They be magnets for bad luck and tragedy. It'd be like that cloud just follow them, right?
Facts.
So anyway.
Facts.
Mousy catch up to Freddie and the crew at Small's Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
He like, damn, oh, my man looking kind of bad. But anyway, that's my man. He say, well, me and the fellas, we are going, and these broads, we are going to Atlantic City.
Right.
Mousy say, can I go? Now, again, it brought me back, you know, me, Eddie, Tracy, we're going to the Cool Jazz Festival. Okay. And we, you know, by getting our outfits and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And Brother Mook. Brother Mook somehow crossed our paths as we was on our way. Let's just say Mook had been on the block for a minute and hadn't made it home to change clothes in a long time. But Mook go back to us to...
to knee-high to Betsy
Buzz. Yeah, so Mook like, I want to go.
Right.
I want to go to Cool Jazz Festival, Cincinnati. Oh, Big look at me. I look at the Hut. The Hut look back. What we going to do? How we going to tell this man we didn't know all our life? Because you done fell off. You ain't good enough to go on vacation with us. You again, these some old school values. Back, you can't do that.
Nope.
If Pop and the old timers find out you did some shit like that, you gonna get a lecture. Like, mm-hmm. what the fuck's wrong with you? That's where we didn't get. We didn't got where we came from. We didn't forget what the struggle is.
Right, exactly.
You niggas couldn't have got him a room. Y'all getting money. Y'all couldn't have figured out a way to make it work.
Right.
Right. And one of the greatest vacations I had, actually. Okay. Our story ended much better than Freddie Meyer's story. Mook came with us, and me, Tracy, and Eddie went to Cincinnati Cool Jazz Festival, and we were able to give our friend who was a little down in his luck a good
weekend. A good time, right.
Well, not so much for Mousy and Freddie Myers. So Mousy all fucked up. He cut into his man. I want to go to Atlantic City with the fellas.
Okay.
You know, if you watch the documentary, Freddie says, you know, despite a better judgment, again, old time loyalties, fuck it. Mousy, you can't ride with me, but you can come. He tells some of the other crew, look, Mousy gonna ride with y'all. Okay, they get to Atlantic City, they get to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Freddie got a whole bunch of rooms. He said they had some young broads, pretty broads. Of course, pretty broads gonna be where guys with the bag is at. They go together like pretty women. And guys with money go together like salt and pepper. Always have, always will.
Forever.
Waffles and pancakes. butter and biscuits.
What is it? Peanut butter and chocolate.
Peanut butter. All that, they go together. You find one, the other one ain't going to be far around.
That's right.
Okay, well, here's where the problem begins, though. So, they get to Atlantic City. They all in their suites. This is according to these other words of New York Freddie Myers. Okay. So, he get to his room. He get a call. Of course, because I'm telling you, when people be fucked up, it be fucked up. Cause so he dressed like a vagrant.
Okay.
You got these pretty young girls who, of course, got in their head. We going with these ballers. We gonna have us a good time, and mm-hmm. we gonna do what pretty young girls and ballers do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mousy call his man because you know people be out there mad. He go call Freddie and tell him, "Hey man, these girls acting real funny style." And Freddie say, he tried to explain to him, well, damn, Mousy, you know, they pretty young girls, and you kind of, you know, without trying to hurt the brother's feelings, you kind of fell off a little bit.
Right,
and,
right.
And, you know, so, mm-hmm. yeah, they, you know, they looking kind of for fly guys, and that ain't how you laying right now, bro. Right. So, you know, kind of relax. He just.
Right.
His man Mousy keep cutting into him, right? Well, no, they ain't treating me right, yada, 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 yada. So. Freddie's man, who's downstairs, named Danny. This character again was gonna be—he's gonna be the Roosevelt neighbor's Johnny Quick. He's a DJ, good guy, but not a hustler.
Okay. Okay. Square.
Square. But he in the clique.
Mm-hmm.
But he is square in the clique. Mm-hmm. Everybody like him. Everybody know him. He been in the scene, right? So he get to hang out with the clique. And instead of, as always, we're gonna get there. Instead of being a square, that's in the clique. And understand that the square and the quick is the luckiest guy in the world because I'm gonna have all the same fun as you niggas hustling, except for when the fans come, y'all going to jail, and I'm gonna be who y'all calling me because see, I ain't doing no dirt with y'all. We just cool,
right?
And so that really is a lesson out there. If you are the square and you plugged in to some guys that's making it happen, stay in your lane. You are the luckiest man.
Ugh.
Because you getting to live the lifestyle without throwing rocks at the penitentiary. It don't get no better than that.
It don't get no better. It's a very sweet spot.
That's a very envious spot. But it's amazing how many people be in that envious spot.
And then want to get over
it. And want to get into the hot lane.
Into the hot lane, right.
The lane, as my mom would say, the lane to lead to the federal penitentiary. All you niggas going to jail. In schoolyard, George used to say, all this money we getting, boy. Niggas ain't supposed to get this much money. We all going to end up in the jailhouse behind this shit here. Wow. Schoolyard would kill Eddie with that shit every time. You know, we all going to end up in the jailhouse behind this shit. All this money we making. Y'all know niggas ain't supposed to have this much money. We all going to the jailhouse behind this right. shit. Fucking with George. Anyway, different story. We'll tell the legend of Schoolyard George another time.
Yeah.
Shout out to George out there too, by the way. Mm-hmm. Real soldier. Last of a dinosaur's breed. Just stand up old school, hard as a rock. Kill a stone for the old man.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Mousy bugging Freddie, saying the girl, the young bras ain't treating them right. Mm-hmm. Yada yada yada. Freddie say, Mousy. Tell old boy Danny, the square, he said he was holding about $19,000 for him or something. He said, tell him to give you a couple dollars and then you'll have some money. Maybe the girls will treat you a little bit better. Because money does have a funny way, despite of wardrobe and appearance, a couple dollars can make
the fair
sex a little more pleasant. At least they can tolerate you, you know. Dressed like a bum, lack of hygiene, and broke, that's three times.
This is kind of pushing it.
Not dressed well, lack of hygiene, but a bunch of $100 bills. I mean, we can find a way to the shower. Well, yeah, now there's nothing more than some soap and water can cure. Once you got a pocket full of hundreds, some soap and water can cure the rest of these ill, baby, and we can get to it. But okay, it don't go down like that.
Okay.
It don't go down like that. We good on the time on our
I just reset it. You're good.
Mousy, you know, this is where his daddy would call it the real nigga shit. Real nigga shit kick in. Mousy tell Danny that Freddie said, give me a couple hundred. I got to tell y'all, all y'all who have been black all your life like myself, know that sometimes it'd be so much money going around, but sometimes in our culture and community, we can just get silly. And I don't think it's just our culture. People, I should stop saying that. People can get real silly. People, especially who are not used to being around money, are used to just doing favors for people. So I've been there, you know, Danny looking at old boy Mousy like, you shouldn't even be here, and now you messing up my good time, and fuck you, and even though boss told me what to do, fuck what boss said. He ain't here. I'm the boss. Especially you got some broads around. I think you guys can figure out the scene, right?
Yeah.
But this shit goes really south for this crew.
Uh-oh.
Mousy says, Freddie said, give me some money. His man, the DJ Danny, says, nah, just that and the third. They get into an altercation. He knocks Mousy down. He say, according to the bras, he tells Freddie he thought Mousy was going for a gun or something. Anyway, he shoots the dope thing. He shoots poor Mousy. Mousy staggers out the room, makes it down to the lobby of the hotel. Freddie Myers and the rest of the crew are all obtained, and now he's on the radar.
Okay.
This then same guy, Danny, who then shot Poe Mousy, they get back to New York. He brings to Freddie Myers a guy by the name of Alvin Jones. Now, Alvin Jones, according to Freddie, had been told that they used to hustle together also, but that he had been popped by the police and he had turned snitch.
Okay.
Now, this is the part, though. It is very much like the Roosevelt neighbors, Eddie J. I mean, there's always that conduit. You know, the feds seldom can get directly close to the big fella himself, right? So they got to get close to somebody who's close to the big fella to infiltrate, to get close enough to get some transactions, right?
Right.
Now, even though I know by the time this has taken place, and Freddie Myers is in New York, so he has seen Frank Matthews go on the run. He has seen Nicky Barnes go to jail. He's seen Guy Fisher go to jail. He knows the game. So when Danny approaches him with this guy, and he's got reputation, this guy as a snitch, instead of just short-circuiting and saying, I'm not going to play with you kids, he basically entertains a conversation. He tells Danny, I'm not serving, I'm not doing business with the guy. Danny says, well, can I do business with the guy? And he tells his man, Danny, look, you're a DJ, you ain't a hustler, you need to stay out of this lane. You know, the same thing that Mr. Horn, the barber, y'all just don't want to see me driving Cadillacs. You know, there was a barber who went to down, good friend of ours, shout out to Mr. Horn. Yeah. But he ended up catching a case with Eddie and the other 32 guys and my dad, because he got out of his lane. He was living the life, running with the crew.
When keeping it real goes wrong.
When keeping it real goes wrong, yeah. Long story short, Freddie looks out for the DJ guy, Danny. Says, maybe you want to try to make you some money, but I'm telling you, I think your man the police. Now, and he tells him, Danny, you're going to end up going to jail. But if Freddie knew what I know, he ain't going to be the one going to jail. You going to be the one going to jail.
Yeah.
Because if he dealing with a snitch, when the shit hit the fan, good chance he going to snitch on you. Even though you think you got a level of separation from the streets or from the snitch, some chances aren't worth taking. You know, hindsight, of course, is always 20/20. All the hustles, everybody's been involved.
Always.
Anyway, of course, the guy was the police, and that is what led to the dismantling of the Good and Plenty crew. Yeah. Yeah,
only take one.
It always takes one, and every it's always one. And of course, this would always happen. It was just really as he was beginning to try to kind of go legit. You know. But I guess the moral of the story, and so many of these stories, when you come from that environment and you're dealing in multi millions of dollars, but your allegiance and your lifestyle is still so closely connected to the streets. So few of us have had the discipline to just really separate ourselves from the streets. Because the streets be full of tragedy and people who are tragedy prone, and you just can't really run a multi-million dollar business and continue to have that close of, because they're gonna get to you. The snitch gonna get to you, to stick a man in the pole. Tragedy's gonna happen. But all that, would love to hear you guys' opinion of this legendary hustler again, New York Freddie Myers. One of those stories that just never got the pub, but another fascinating story from that era and for people who cover and enjoy kind of gangster material, gangster history. He's got a place in it. So shout out to New York Freddie Myers.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, and check out his doc. I hope his people are the ones who own the intellectual property on that.
Yeah, because as we know, just recently, speaking of intellectual properties, there is a movie that there's a standing boycott. You've heard of a talented boxer by the name of Mike Tyson.
Get out of here. What's up with the Iron Man?
Okay, he has.
You know, I told him I should be his manager back December 30th. 1989, I told him at Nell's, you should let your man CB represent you.
You see? Yeah. He probably should have listened.
He probably should have listened. We both would have a couple hundred M's.
Yeah, a couple hundred
M's more.
Probably, anyway, knowing you by now, probably be a couple of B's.
A couple of B's.
And what he had,
Cut it out.
No, but his doc came out. Not doc, his biopic came out.
Okay.
But Mike is upset that he's not getting a penny for it.
So they didn't bring him in.
It was Hulu. It's a Hulu original. And the streets is talking.
I mean, I get that, but then I don't get it. So, I mean, Hulu's a big platform, but it ain't HBO, right?
Well, I mean, I think they're backed by Disney.
Somebody big behind them.
Yeah.
But business is business. Subsidiary of Disney, they've got a budget. obviously the Mike Tyson story is compelling.
Absolutely.
That's where, well, what we talk about and why we're doing what we're doing, and it's been slow and it's been meticulous, but lining up the dots so that we can do the Eddie Jackson story and Courtney Brown story and the story of some of these Detroit stories to do it on our terms.
Mm-hmm.
Is important, and why we have done the documentary, done the book, and done some things to protect our intellectual property.
That's right. That's right.
To my knowledge, there is no autobiography of Mike Tyson.
No, I don't think so.
Why him and his team had never already done a documentary, as fascinating and as famous as he is, I don't know, because somebody close to him had to say, yo, champ, if we don't do this,
right,
someone else is going to do it, and all your life is public record, so they don't have to.
They don't have to.
To bring you in. Now, you would think, a 50 Cent G-Unit bringing in Meech and the Flannery family into the BMF series, and so many other examples of people who want to do stories on people's lives and bring those people in or their family members in,
mm-hmm.
and say, why don't you guys come in as consultants or producers so we can really get the story.
The story,
especially
right.
in Tyson's case, where you could get the story straight from the... But they ain't that interested in the truth, no way.
Well, I mean, as we saw from American Gangster. I mean, you spoke of it a few minutes ago.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Paramount. Ike Atkins reached out after the New Yorker interview. When Frank Lucas did that interview that really started the whole ball to rolling with the Atlantic magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, with the New Yorker magazine. Talking about the Coffin connection and the plug coming out of Southeast Asia. Ike was sitting down in Butner.
Okay.
The old man ended up on that last go-round.
Is that in Atlanta?
North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina.
Butner, North Carolina.
Okay.
Medical medical facility.
Okay.
So Ike writes a letter to the New Yorker saying, yo, that story's not accurate. I was the guy bringing in the stuff from Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Lucas got his work from me. I took Frank Lucas to Thailand. I was the guy with the bar. Me and my partner, we the ones who did all this. But the New Yorker was like, but you know, guys.
It's a little too late.
A little too late. Story's already out. And once Paramount jumped on, you know, the bandwagon, then it's mm-hmm. a bunch of suits making decisions and... Ike Atkins, Frank Lucas, Harlem, black guy, drug dealer, one, both from North Carolina. Close enough, guys. Close enough.
Close. Big time.
But they threw Ike a bone, at least.
Yeah. Oh, did they?
Ike had about $800,000
on his consultant.
I mean, not really for a movie that grossed over $400
million. Yeah, yeah.
If he would have, again, at his stage in life, I get it. $800,000 at his stage in life was like... $8 million for us, you know,
mm-hmm.
at our age, because he's like, clock ticket, it's late, it's the 2-minute warning, and you talk about $800,000, I'll run with it.
Mm-hmm.
But for future generations of his family, let's just say he had said, okay, give me the $800,000 plus 1% of gross. Mm-hmm. Well, 1% of $400 million is $4 million. And counting, because you're going to be seeing American Gangster
forever. Right, that'll be like our White Heat or
Al Capone story, Al the Untouchable.
Right,
Benny or no? What was with Warren Beatty?
Bugsy.
It'll be like Bugsy. It'll be like the Untouchables.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be like Dillinger. They're gonna mm-hmm. be playing that movie over and over again forever.
Exactly.
And but that goes back to the financial literacy, you know, kind of thing, though, family.
Definitely.
So, great story, untold story of street legend, New York Freddie Myers. You know, so that's what we do here at Big Boss. We're gonna talk a little bit about the Eddie Jackson buyout.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eddie Jackson buyout. I'll bring you guys. I know a lot of you guys are on the channel. It's growing. So again, and I always forget, and we must remember. Please, guys, if you're watching us on YouTube, hit that like, share, and subscribe button.
Smash that notification bell down below.
Check us out also. Where are we at on Facebook and IG?
Big Boss Filmworks around the board. We're on IG. We're on TikTok now. Dropping a few shorts. Look at YouTube Shorts. Check out, we'll be doing some stuff on live Facebook very soon.
Yeah, we're interviewing some tech people and trying to grow out this team. Again, we want to get this Motown Mafia, get Motown, making it a mafia, we're pretty much almost home with that. I wish it was going to happen this year. I don't see Motown Mafia Part 2 happening the end of the year, but I think we'll at least be starting.
We'll be in production.
We'll be in production.
Sure.
We'll be in production.
Yeah, we're putting that together.
And so that's gonna happen. So yeah, make sure you guys are hitting that like, share, and subscribe. We got a lot of hot stuff coming up. And I was saying, I know a lot of people have come on, so we are, again, I'm just honored and pleased with the growth of the channel. So sometimes, for those who already are familiar with the story, you know, bear with us, because we got to sometimes backtrack to keep the whole family up to breast. And again, we always suggest that everybody check out the book if you like to read Motown Mafia Memoirs of a Kingpin Kid, or check out the doc Motown Mafia on Tubi TV or Amazon Prime, so you guys can really always have a full grasp on where we would be going with these stories and why we have some of these unique insights.
Yeah, for sure.
Of course, also on Amazon is Mind Right Money Right, Getting Off Zero. Give you guys some business ideas. And then, can you hand me
The Big Man?
The Big Man. Big Man on Campus. A fictionalized story of my days in college when I first started working for the old man. Names and places have been changed, as we say, to protect the guilty and the innocent. But that's also available on Kindle, on Amazon. We're going to have that. And paperback. But if you get it on paperback, you got to go directly to us, shoot us an email, or go to BigBossFilmWorks.com, and we can send you a hard copy. I think we'll probably actually go ahead and give Amazon some hard copies also.
Yeah.
But you can get Mind Right Money Right, Getting Off Zero directly from Amazon, Kindle, or paperback. You can get Motown Mafia Memoirs of a Kingpin's Kid on Amazon, paperback, or Kindle, and Big Man on Campus available on Amazon, Kindle, and soon paperback also. But you can always go to BigBossFilmWorks.com and buy it directly from us.
And so, go ahead, big time. We also really want to hear from you guys. Like, who are some of the people you want to hear us chat about? Who are some of the people you want to know about? I want to know in the comments section some of the hell of a fellas, some of the real ones. Talk to us. Tell us what you want to see. And in the comments section, you leave the right comment, we're going to drop you a book. If you don't have it already, The Big Man on Campus, Motown Mafia, or Getting Off Zero.
Yeah.
We're going to do a freebie for one of you lucky commenters.
Yeah. Definitely send out a comment. Send out something, and then you know what? In fact, we might have to be maybe send in a comment, and we're going to do, maybe we can do that with some of the t-shirts
too. Yeah, we got t-shirt selection, baseball caps,
For the new stock hits, we can send out some of the past designs to some of the family out there, because
big time.
We are a benevolent crew, because we learned from the real trap gods that you guys are us, and we are you guys, and so we family, so we should look out for each other. You guys check in and keep telling people about us, so you're doing your part, so we're going to do our part and look out for you guys too.
Definitely.
Alright, so let's take a hot little break.
Hot break.
And come back and give a little throwback history of the Eddie Jackson organization, Eddie Jackson buyout, the man who was doing franchises before franchises got popular. Holler at your man. It's your man, CRB Jr., Big Lou, Big Boss Filmworks, Motown Mafia Podcast. Some of this stuff. Okay, let me stop talking and take a break. But for those who do not know, we have another channel called The Diaspora Plug that's available on YouTube. We had really started off as though we were doing a lot of business in Africa prior to the pandemic. But we're going to start putting up a lot of the business content that we do, because obviously me, I'm a businessman entrepreneur. Lou, you're a businessman entrepreneur.
Definitely.
We do business together, and we do business with all kind of people. And we want to really start chronicling, you know, the other brothers and sisters in our community who are doing some big things mm-hmm. and little things, because all big things were one time little things. Definitely. So we're going to start putting up some of that content up on the Diaspora Plug, kind of expand. It's going to be a lot more than just about business in Africa and the motherland. It's going to be a plug for the diaspora, for brothers and sisters anywhere trying to do business and do something entrepreneurial. We're going to have some hot content on the Diaspora Plug for you. Everybody was just, who was that? Oh, that was Dane giving Joe Budden some praise, reminding people that Joe Budden was actually on Rockefeller, and that Joe could spit. Joe just didn't get his...
He didn't get his just in the hip-hop community.
It was like the world was different. Yeah, a lot of people got caught up in that era, man.
Yeah.
A lot of people got caught up in that era. Were you familiar with a guy back in that day called Mike Geronimo?
Yeah.
Mike
Geronimo was on tap.
I was not, I'll be honest, and I was in New York again when it was going down, but again, it was so much talent coming out of New York.
I mean,
between 88 and 93.
But you got to know, when you talk about me, I used to get my paychecks to go to the record store and buy about 10, 15 new records and singles and stuff like that on vinyl.
Okay.
And I remember buying Mike Geronimo. I can't remember the name of the single, but it was on fire.
Yeah, so he's a Queens guy. So mm-hmm. he knew, you know, he was with around Nas, Mobb Deep, all mm-hmm. of us, everything. You know, Queens, Homer Run DMC, Homer LL Cool J, Tribe Called Quest. I mean, mm-hmm. Queens was bringing it, right?
Yeah.
But I wasn't hip to his story, but I was, you know, I follow, shout out to those brothers and all the success they're having over there at that platform, Expert Opinion, Math Offer.
Okay.
They were interviewing him.
Okay.
Really good interview.
Mm-hmm.
They've been on fire over there.
Yeah, that's like right in my generation.
When he's kicking all his stories, a lot of it kind of even spilled over because he was with Irv Gotti.
Okay.
He was like that with Irv, but he was with Irv prior to Murder Inc. And they were showing some of it, and then, so it made me go and look at some of his videos. And you know, a lot of the stories he's telling are related to Irv Gotti. It's related to when Kenneth Supreme McGriff came home.
Okay.
But another one of those guys that seemingly was very talented, but just kind of got, the industry was changing, and you look at, you know, it happens in life, you know, because he's like Nas's man.
Mm-hmm.
And Irv Gotti's man. And, mm-hmm. you know, though he didn't understand, as young people don't, tend not to.
Mm-hmm.
And no one could have imagined that these guys that you're running around Queens with are going to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and that these companies are going to partner with Warner and Universal and Virgin, and this shit is about to be the biggest music brand, genre in the world. And, so that's the cool thing about that show over there. You know, they cover a lot of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because we're here right here in Detroit right now, and these young homies here, Detroit's got some of the hottest hip-hop artists in the country out of here, right?
Big time.
In fact, on that, I guess a little leak, our homegirl, shout out to Michelle Moore over at Say You Promise Publishing and Hood Books, Sada Baby. And his man want to do some stuff.
Who, T. Grizzly?
They want us to participate in, hopefully I'm not saying something I'm supposed to say in public, but a literacy thing, some real just community services to give back. And of course, we have Big Boss, when she reached out and said, you know, would you like to help out with the literacy? And her obviously being in the publishing world and getting some books to the kids. And, she's got relationships with that crew, the Sada Baby's crew, and all above. So of course, I was like, so I should have told you earlier, pardon me, but I'm telling you, I think we're gonna do something.
This is gonna be big.
We're gonna do something.
Big time
for the kids, and try to help this literacy situation, because we want the kids to be able to read our book, but the kids can't read a book if they can't read. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but so Sada just is an example of another one of the many Detroit artists that are just on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Right down the hall from where we are now. Shout out he had some legal problems lately. I don't know, and I won't give it all that. But, you know, I got a chance to meet the young homie, 42 Doug.
Okay.
You know, a neighbor. We were neighbors for a minute. Another on-fire Detroit artist. And just so many. Detroit's just on fire. Yeah, so, times have changed. I don't think those guys are going to have the same fate as many of those early rappers, because now the industry is, you know, 100% mature. So, you know, they get it. They just got to stay away from them white folks and those alphabet boys and stick to getting that bag, and they'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of, okay, so this is Courtney Rob Brown Jr., CRB Jr. here at
Motown Mafia Podcast.
Of course, a Big Boss Filmworks production. And here, of course, with the man who makes it happen, my partner, my brother,
the great Louis Stevens.
How you feeling, fam?
Man, I'm in it, man. I'm in it to win.
We back at it again. Just took us a little break. And yeah, we back at it. And we're going to finish 2022 strong. And then we're going to let him have it in 2023.
Yeah.
Going down. It is going down.
Yeah, we got a lot of content coming.
I hope, you know, to quote LL Cool J, please don't call it a comeback, because we have been here for years. And shout out to all our other partners out there. Shout out to Scott Bernstein. Shout out to Al Profit. Shout out to my brother, Eddie Baby, on Instagram, a.k.a. Real True Street Crimes, a.k.a. Eddie Jackson Jr.
Yeah.
Shout out to the homie. So, yeah, let's speaking of Eddie Jackson Jr., we're going to talk a little bit about his daddy.
Okay.
The original Dundada here in Detroit, Eddie the Fat Man Jackson, the legend himself, who, of course, for you who have not somehow missed it, great book wrote by yours truly, Memoirs of a Kingpin's Kid, Motown Mafia, the story of Eddie Jackson and Courtney Brown. And then, of course, this book got turned into the award-winning documentary Motown Mafia, which is available on Tubi TV and Amazon Prime, the story of Eddie Jackson and Courtney Brown, right? Also, we got, before we get into the story, if you guys are looking for some inspirational reading, want to do a little black history also, combo book, Getting Off Zero, Mind Right, Money Right, because if you get your mind right, mm-hmm. then you can get your money right.
That's right.
Shout out to Ray Tatum and Getting Off Zero down there in Atlanta, our partner on that project. And then we also got Big Man on Campus, the fictional story of myself when in college and I first started working for Pops. We had to change some names and locations to protect the guilty and the innocent. But all those are available on Amazon. Motown Mafia and Getting Off Zero, Mind Right, Money Right are available in paperback and in Kindle, on Kindle. Big Man on Campus right now just available on Amazon on Kindle, but you can get the paperback copy if you just reach out to us directly, or just go to bigbossfilmworks.com and we'll get you a copy of that out. And again, the award-winning documentary
Motown Mafia,
check it out. That's right there on Tubi, which is free.
Amazon Prime
and actually iTunes, I think it's on like pretty much any digital platform that you would want to see. You can check out Motown Mafia, story of Eddie Jackson and Courtney Brown. But you know, Lou, it's got a close friend of the family. I won't divulge who it is, but it's my mentor's daughter.
Okay.
You know, they just got a Chick-fil-A franchise.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You know, that's a really big deal.
That's beautiful.
Every
Chick-fil-A I've ever seen is on fire.
Great company, just awesomely ran company.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, franchise concept, and of course, one of the big mistakes or the opportunities, not mistakes, opportunities that Eddie and my dad passed on were when Chuck Goldfarb approached them in the early 70s about getting a McDonald's franchise.
All right.
And at that time, the McDonald's franchise was like $175,000. Fortunately, Eddie's spin on it seemed like a lot of money for a hamburger joint, I believe was his response. But a franchise is basically a model where somebody comes up with an idea or a concept, they kind of perfect it, work out the kinks, and then they say, you pay me a fee for the use of my name and my concept, and I'll let you do that, and I'll come in with all the expertise and support and product that you need so that you can get money the way that I'm getting money.
Right.
So anybody's ever seen the movie The Founder with Michael Keaton?
Great
movie. Keaton plays Ray Kroc Jr., the guy who franchised out and made himself, of course, billions of dollars with McDonald's. But now the interesting part about that is his name is Ray Kroc, not McDonald's. There were two brothers, the McDonald brothers, who had the original McDonald's concept. Ray Kroc saw the McDonald's concept and said, this should be all over the world, all over the country first, then all over the world. The McDonald brothers didn't really see the vision.
No, no.
So Ray Kroc doesn't say, look at the McDonald's situation, see the McDonald's brothers restaurant and say, hey, I should go try to open up a hamburger restaurant and do just what they're doing. No, and you know, and especially in our community, that would have been the entrepreneurial approach. We see somebody get money, and instead of saying, can I partner with you in some kind of way and just do what you're doing and you show me what you're doing? We say, nope, I'm going to do it on my own, what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'll just copy what you're doing. I'm going to go to the other side of town, might go across the street from you and start doing the same thing that you're doing. Right?
Exactly.
Well, Ray Kroc was an evolved business mind, and he didn't think like that. He said, no. You don't tinker with what worked.
That's right.
I need to figure out, and of course he got the McDonald brothers to sign off to allow him the rights to franchise out McDonald's, and that's why he's worth billions now, and maybe the McDonald brothers got $1 million out the deal.
Yeah. You know, I think it was $2 million from the film.
Yeah, just crazy. And then they took a handshake agreement for the some type of profit share that they never got. But that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
So getting back to say, well, how does this tie in to Eddie Jackson and you guys and you hustle your pop's hustle story, right? So to give a little backstory, let me give you the kind of the time, place, and setting. So it is 1971. Eddie has already blown up. His core crew, he's hustling with a lot of people. You got to again watch the doc, you'll get that info. He's hustling with a lot of people. His core crew, as we call them in the book, the Fabulous Five that started, his brother, rest in peace, Elijah, has already passed.
Mm-hmm.
So you got my dad. You got Ronald 5-0 Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
You got the great Charles Rudolph.
Mm-hmm.
You got Russell Clayton. Shout out to Russell Clayton Jr. too.
What's up, Russ?
Russ, he just reached out. We gonna catch up. You know, bro, just busy. And then you got the big man himself, right?
Yeah.
And these five are the ones that are making it happen in this town. Another integral member of the crew is a guy by the name of Big Willie Kilpatrick.
Mm-hmm.
So by this time, the famous ebony photo has been taken with him and Frank Lucas at the Ali Frazier fight.
Okay.
He has met Carlos Lombardozzi, a.k.a. Doc Gambino.
Mm-hmm.
He is now plugged in with the mob. He's already had a hell of a run with a guy named John Claxton.
Okay.
Pop's already found him the building on Hancock, which they have turned into a multi-million dollar outlet for their product, and Eddie's booming. He's already established himself.
Okay.
So, Big Willie had whispered in his ear, like, Eddie, now that you got the plug and you got the bag, he's still really running just a retail operation. You know, they're right. Still out of Hancock. You know, they're selling weight to some people, but they're mostly just selling quarters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $20, $30, $50, whatever bags. And Big Willie is credited, according to Pops. He tells Eddie, you know, man, the shit you're getting is better than anybody in town. You don't have to go retail. Why don't you can make the same money and do a whole lot less work and just wholesale? And Eddie, of course, pondered it for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he ran the numbers, and Big Willie's
assessment was correct, that there was actually more money for him at the quality and the amount that he was getting, that he can just hit it and pass it out, mm-hmm. let other people move the half bricks, bricks, or whatever, right? Right. So Eddie decides that Big Willie is right. But he's got a crew now. He's got my dad, he's got 5-0, he's got Charles Rudolph, and he's got Russell Clayton. Mm-hmm. These guys are eating good and living good mm-hmm. under the old arrangement.
Okay.
Well, also, by this time, people got to understand Eddie's running a $1 million operation, and with that comes lots of responsibilities and people, there's expectations and people want stuff.
Right.
And people want a raise, right? So even though he's paying everybody, you know, $2,000 a week, and he's running a, you know, a $10,000-$20,000 a week payroll, people are looking at the millions he's making. So he sees what's going to happen potentially, yeah, right? Exactly. People going to start counting his money. They're already starting to count his money.
Yeah.
So Eddie was proactive. He calls a meeting over at my dad's house. On Mark Twain, right off Outer Drive. Mm-hmm. He tells Berman, tell 5-0, Rudolph, and Russell to come over. I need to talk to you guys, right? Mm-hmm. He explains to them that he is out of the wholesale business, that they can have the Hancock retail business, they can have the House on Benson retail business and all their other spots, but he's done. Obviously, you guys want some work, come get it from me.
Right.
And you guys have been really loyal. You guys have helped me build this thing from scratch. Here's $10,000 each. I know in 2022, again, $10,000 doesn't seem like a significant amount of money. But again, you guys got to understand inflation, right? Last year, gas was $2.50 a gallon. Now it's $4, $5 a gallon. That's inflation. Your money's only, same tank of gas is only worth half of what it was. Well, we're talking about a time in 1971 where a gallon of gas was 50 cents.
So you get
put it in perspective. $10,000 back in 71 is like $100,000 all day as far as buying power and lifestyle. You know, a brand new Rolls Royce back then cost you $30,000, $40,000. Brand new Rolls Royce today costs you $300,000, $400,000. So everything's about worth 10 times more than it was back then. Right? Yeah. So your money's worth 10 times more. So. Mm-hmm. Basically, he's passing out $100,000 to each one of the crew, and he's telling them, you guys can still get your work from me, but you don't work for me anymore. He's creating a franchise.
That's right.
Because he knows, Eddie puts the spin on it, and he tells them, now you guys can go take this money and go get your shit from whoever you want. Mm-hmm. You ain't got to get it from me.
Mm-hmm.
But they already, 5-0, Dolph and Russell and Pops already know, you got the best shit at the best price, and you are man. Who else am I going to go get this shit from? And my customers expect your product.
Our product to be my product.
To be my product. But so with doing that, Eddie goes from a $20,000 a week payroll to no payroll.
Right.
Right? And, like, knowing our culture, knowing our people, everybody really, most Negroes want to say they the boss. Now the crew can actually say, I don't work for Eddie no more. I'm the man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This my shit.
Yeah.
Work like a charm. Of course, he gave the old man an option and said, you know, Berman, you can go on your own if you want. I get that. But if you would like to stay on and just help me run my thing, Pops, unlike the other three, unlike Russell, 5-0, and Dolph, Pops, of course, decides to stay and work with Eddie. It worked out pretty well for him financially.
Definitely.
But, you know, with that, he made more money. So now let's just take it back to, like, the legitimate world. By empowering his employees, financing, and, you know, and even on, obviously, much, you remember, and you were kind of there, Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Me and Vano are partners at Gear Unlimited, right? 1313 One Dexter.
That's right.
I have moved around the block and got a much bigger store with a lot more square footage, a lot more inventory mm-hmm. at Hall of Fame Clothing, right?
Right.
So I'm thinking to myself, I'm damn near competing against myself, right? And Vano, my man, we made good money together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, because I'm really getting into wholesale, right? I'm about to start going to China. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking owning Gear Unlimited ain't a good idea for me. So I had told Vano, I said, Vano, he looked at me like I was crazy. I said, Vano, why don't you buy me out? He's like, what are you talking about? We're just starting to crank over here. I'm like, yeah, man, but I'm right around the block. I'm already doing this, that, and the third. You know, I didn't got plugged in with them boys over there on West Warren.
Right.
You know, I got more sneakers than Foot Locker. Why are we going to do this?
Right.
Why don't you just give me what I done put in, and then we can still break bread. Sold off a franchise. Right. Vinyl ended up taking that franchise, buying me out completely, so it was a little bit different, and went on, shout out to Vinyl, shout out to Gear Unlimited. If you guys are ever on, I'm not...
Yo, get at me, man.
Yeah, if you're ever on Dexter, Linwood area, or Davidson, Linwood area, make sure you guys check out Vinyl. He's got some of the nicest clothes in the city. Guy's got an impeccable eye for fashion, and he is the homie, so shout out to him, shout out to Bow Wow, shout out to the whole crew over there at Gear Unlimited, and Vinyl's. But I guess the point of it, the similarities with all of that is empowering people and understanding that being the boss ain't always the most profitable thing. Sometimes
often the boss gets paid
last, if never, right. So many times I have paid payroll and everybody else took home $600, $800 for the week, and I took home $8. Sometimes no dollars. Sometimes even worse, had to go to the bank to pay payroll. Had to take some money from business A to pay for business B. Mm-hmm. That's really all that come into being a boss. So anytime you can think of ways to arrange your business where you're in more partnerships as opposed to employer-employee relationships is what we're trying to say, family, you need to do.
That's right. And I mean, for a hustler, for a kingpin, that was a sophisticated, ahead-thinking move. I mean, you don't see that.
I mean, I've studied... you know, obviously this kind of stuff extensively.
Mm-hmm.
The closest other model that I've seen is what the big homie Frank Matthews did.
Okay.
With his people, Liddy Jones and Pop Darby and those guys up and down from Baltimore and Philly.
Right.
Where he basically said, look, I got the work. You guys just run, you guys run Philly. You run Baltimore. I'm not, but... we're going to keep product quality control. Right. You going to say, everybody going to know you got McDonald's quality beef. So when they say this is a McDonald's franchise, you're going to have all the same credibility as me. Because everybody's going to know that I'm the one backing you. But I'm not going to micromanage you. I don't want to be your boss. And, you know, Butch has spoke about this. Shout out to the Black Dispatch, the Unk. Got to get Unk back. Unk, busy doing some stuff with some of his properties. But shout out, got to get back to work, Unk. The Black Dispatches spoke about that when people would come to Eddie and say, don't so-and-so work for you? And then Eddie would be like, nah, we hustle together. Mm-hmm. Don't nobody work for me.
Right.
And, you know, he would later hit the old man with the same kind of situation when the old man was talking about he couldn't afford this and he couldn't afford that. And he says, well, why not just make you a partner? Mm-hmm. Then can you afford it? Because I'm tired of hearing this silly shit you talking, Berman, about what you can't afford.
Right.
And we getting all this money. You say you can't afford to move next to me. All right, well, you my partner now. Take an advance off the next bag to come in and go buy the house next door to me. And then take another advance and go buy yourself a couple Cadillacs and Lincolns. And take another advance and buy a bunch of furniture and baby grand pianos and Cartier china. And now you'll be good, right? Okay, you're my partner. You don't work for me. Now you're happy. And Eddie was just really smart like that.
Mm-hmm.
And was secure enough in himself that he didn't need people to be taught. Because, one, everybody already knew he's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't need his ego stroked by somebody saying, they work for you. Just the opposite. He's trying to tell people that these guys don't work for me, but they don't believe him. But yeah, for real, when, you know, we, what have we been, how, what have we been saying here at Big Boss for, what I've been saying for the last couple of years? You know, I don't want partners, I don't want employees, I want partners.
That's right.
I want people who bring skill sets and talents to us, and let's worry about splitting up this big bag, not worrying about your paycheck on Friday.
Payroll.
I mean, because if you can't see past the paycheck, and this is what separates the bosses from the non-bosses. If you need the security of knowing what you're going to make on Friday, I get that, and life is real. But then you're not ready to be a boss. The boss has got to be willing to take the chance of there not being anything there and everybody else eating but them. Because when things, when the worm turns, then right. The boss eats well.
That's right.
And the boss eats well. So that was a great lesson, you know, as I got a chance to see as a kid. And over the years, you know, I've heard the story retold so many times of Eddie and the buyout and how he sent the crew off on their own. And they profited. He profited, and it was just a better arrangement. You know, everybody else, you know, in the streets, that's my lieutenant, that's my soldier, that's right. My crew. Yeah, you might want to think about spending. Yeah, you might want to think about that model.
Right.
You might really want to think about that model. So, as again, you know, business is business. The lessons you learn in the streets, you know, we that's a lot of what we're going to do is try to use some of those street lessons. And now, at least in my case, you know, I've been a legitimate businessman and as long as I worked, longer than I actually worked for my father. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we try to share some of those insights and how those lessons learned and how they can help you. Because if you're an African American entrepreneur, the same dynamics that happen in the street really are going to affect how your business runs, especially if you have a traditional brick and mortar store.
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
This digital world has changed things a little bit, but still not. I mean, whether it's an affiliate program. And, you know, affiliate is not your sales rep. That's somebody who's got their own thing but selling your shit. Mm-hmm. Or you're selling somebody else's shit and you don't have to actually carry the inventory and all of that. Drop shipping, all it's all basic street shit. It's still somebody else's bag that you got access to and you can move it without having the carrying cost and all of that. And they partner with people and say, I got a big bag over here. You guys set up an affiliate program or a distribution or an Amazon store. Mm-hmm. It's all, you know, they use fancy words sometimes to confuse the masses.
Yeah.
You know, they do that. They do a lot of that. So that's part of why we here. That's part of why we here. So yeah, just right. A little throwback of the famous Eddie Jackson buyout.
Yeah, man, that's classic.
Yeah, and how it all occurred. So hope you guys learned something. If you guys got some business questions, not saying that we can answer all of them, and especially can't answer them all for free, even though we don't really do the consulting business anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, if the right situation arises, anything is possible, but we're really, really busy.
Big time. Really, we'll be doing a live here on YouTube with your business questions. Yeah. And then we'll do the paid response.
Yeah, and we're really pondering when we launch this Patreon channel. I mean, I think I really want to do some whole seminars and really unpack, you know, I was just watching, and shout out to those brothers. I was not familiar with them. Tony the Closer was interviewing.
Keep going. Yeah.
Was interviewing Dame Dash. And, you know, I'm a big Dame Dash fan. We met years ago in Vegas, and he just did me a solid. We are not friends, and we're not friends, but we're just business. He was doing something with ProCAD sneakers, and he did me a solid out there in Magic at the Magic Show in Vegas, and I really saw he was a stand-up guy then. So anyway, I've been following Dame since then, and he was on his brother's podcast, and he was talking about raising money and how he hates raising money, and I get it too, because I'm a similar cloth. I, you know, I've had to do it, and I, you know, God is good. I haven't had to do it in a while, but I know what it is. I have to go to friends and family and say, I got an idea. I don't got all the bread. Let's try to figure out a way. You guys got some bread. Let's figure out a way to see if we can make this make sense. And you guys give me some bread, I can give you X, Y, Z back. it's not begging. It is business in our community. We can't sometimes distinguish the difference between asking somebody for an investment and asking somebody for a loan, or asking someone for an investment and asking somebody just, there's a difference saying, I need some money to pay my rent and I need some money to start a business. But often in our community, we hear those things the same way.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. We don't distinguish the difference between giving somebody money to pay tuition and giving somebody money to start a business. And so I want to, maybe on the Patreon, again, we can't do all that kind of stuff just for gratis. Right. But we'll work out some arrangement for the family out there and really work out, because, I understand starting startups and how to, the challenges of finding that early seed money to get your thing off. But it really requires some kind of almost like classroom structure to really, for the family to get the full story.
That's right.
And get to the point. But, because sometimes you do got to raise money. Sometimes you just don't have it, and you got to know how to go about that and how to have those kind of conversations. And explain to your auntie who's sitting on that bag, auntie, I'm not asking you for a gift or a loan. I'm asking you for an investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, this is something that's going to make you money, not cost you money.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, once someone has given me some money, once they give me $30,000 and then at the end of the year I give them back $35,000 or $40,000, then they're like, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually people, instead of you asking them for money, believe it or not, people start calling you saying, what you got going on? You don't need no money to do something, because
right. People
who got money like to see their $30,000 turn into
$40,000
when they didn't do any work for it, except for have some faith in an idea or a concept. So, I mean, that's all the white folks do on Wall Street, family. I mean, it's just, and out in Silicon Valley on a much larger scale. So again, but those are all lessons, you know, you can learn from the block if you've been on the block again. And Damon says that all the time. You know, a lot of time on the news and TV and the media, they frame business and they use these words, venture capitalists, start seed funding, and they use all these words to try to keep people from not understanding really what's going on, and that it's a
barrier.
Yeah, and make you feel intimidated that you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to do all that. We're going to do all that coming up soon and share our experience, strengths, and hopes with the family out there.
Beautiful.
And open up some access. And because you got a new venture. What are you doing with obituaries and things?
Yeah.
And to your graphic business.
Starting a new venture, Sunrise Sunset, for funeral graphics, videos, loved ones, even if it's not to do with funerals, like family albums, the video presentation, slideshows, like mini documentaries for your loved one.
Because the stuff you did for Craig was just hot. Again, rest in peace to my brother, Craig Joseph Johnson, RIP. And rest in peace to your grandma, Miss Annie Stevens.
Definitely.
And the stuff you did, once I saw him, I was like, Lou, this is a service you got to offer to the public.
Yeah.
Because it was just too classy. It was too cool. And today's, the people who were at the service of our dear friend that passed, and the fact that they could just go to that URL code.
Yes.
And then view all those photos, because people have lived such rich, full lives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a big obituary for my man and all that, but you couldn't put all those. So the way that you laid that out, so.
Yeah, I'll leave you all a link after the video is over, so you can check it out if you haven't seen it yet. And you can reach me at 313-459-9919 if you're interested in getting an obituary put together. If you want to get a video obituary documentary for your loved one, we'll talk rates, we'll talk, business. It's 313-459-9919, or on Instagram at Flyers Plus Graphics.
Right, and Big Boss is at, which is just, you can use Big Boss to find. They can find us on TikTok at Big Boss.
Yeah, TikTok,
IG,
Instagram, IG. You name it.
We're going to start doing a lot more live stuff again. We had some family things and personal things we had to get in order, but those things have been settled, so it is time to get to it and make this all that it can be. Yeah. So, and if you're watching us on YouTube, make sure you hit that like, share, and subscribe. You know, we are available on all your podcasting platforms. I shouldn't say all, but we'll be very soon all. But you can definitely get us on Anchor and Spotify, correct?
That's right. Yeah.
And I think iTunes coming soon.
iTunes coming soon, for sure.
On the pod tip, so that way if guys are in your car doing some work around the house, don't got time to sit in front of the TV or the phone, you can still hear what we're spitting and hopefully get some insight and some education and entertainment all at the same time. So it's a lot going down. So yeah, man, lessons learned. Lessons learned from the throwback. Lessons learned from the big man, the fat man himself, RIP Eddie Jackson. So yeah, it's hot. So again, hit that like, share, and subscribe button. We appreciate you guys much here. Yeah. Hit us up in the comments. Let us know what you're thinking, what you're talking about. If it's something out there you think we need to be covering. Again, we're going to start putting up a lot more stuff on the other platform. You know, you guys may think that it's, it has been. It was predominantly a lot of the travels and business opportunities we were doing. We were in the coffee space in Africa on our other channel, the Diaspora Plug. But we're really repivoting that. It's still about people in the diaspora, because everybody of color is in the diaspora, and we still have that plug for you to find out how to get that bread a bunch of different places and put connect dots and put Atlanta in touch with Detroit and Detroit in touch with Fort Lauderdale and Fort Lauderdale in touch with New York and New York in touch with Ghana and Ghana in touch with Senegal. So we still doing all that, but we're going to cover a lot of local people on the diaspora plug and just business opportunities of people with melanin pigment in their skin. In fact, some of this stuff may be on the plug. So all that's coming, man. We got a lot going on here, Big Boss, and we're just happy, proud, and excited. So you good, my brother?
We good, man.
All right, family. It's your man, CRB Jr., with his man, partner in crime, Lewis Stevens, making it happen. Big Boss Filmworks, Motown Mafia Podcast. Holla at you, man.
Peace.